Hey, folks, greetings from the Offensive Security Group here at Secure IT 360, coming at you with a new episode of the Cyber Threat Perspective. You've got myself, Brad, and Mr. Darius Robinson here with us. So today we're going to talk about web application threats in the modern landscape. But before we get too deep, I just want to take a moment to appreciate having Darius here because he and I have a pretty big passion that we share together.
Oh, yeah. Glad to be here. Looking forward to talk about one of my favorite subjects, web app security. Yep. So yeah, let's hop into it.
Yeah, for sure, man. So Darius is a web app pen tester here at Secure IT 360. So for those of you that don't know him, what we're talking about today, I want to just kind of quickly break it down. You know, web applications obviously aren't new. Web application risks and threats are not new. However, you know, we kind of built the concept of web application security around the individual web application. And we did that, you know, a long time ago, because when you built a web app, it just kind of stood alone. It lived in a vacuum. Obviously, there was risk potentially posed to the data and the users, but, you know, there wasn't a wide-reaching impact if that application were to be compromised. And so we kind of compartmentalized individual applications, and we're like, okay, application one has these flaws and these risks, and therefore, you know, we treated it a certain way. But that's not the world we live in anymore. And so nowadays, not only do we have, you know, web services, websites, but everything lives on HTTP or HTTPS or web services of some kind, right? And so, you know, even talking about like mobile apps, for example, are really just a wireframe to an API, which is a web application. Same could be said for a lot of things, even what you think are binaries on your local machine, air quotes, fat clients, you know, like Microsoft Teams is an Electron app running Node.js, right?
Which is a whole complete
and which
going full circle.
and it stores plain text, you know, information that you can steal and impersonate people with. So, you know, side note, but you know, the point is, everything either lives on as a web service or integrates to some capacity as a web service, right? I think even your car integrates with web services, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. It's at the point now where, you know, what do we as people do on a daily basis? I mean, at some point, we're going to hopefully eat, we're going to get something to drink, and at some point, we're interacting with an API in some capacity on a daily basis. It's just crazy how, you know, how integrated we are now across the board. And like you said, you know, we really have to really start thinking of web app security as a, you know, kind of as a collective instead of just individual web apps.
Agreed 100%. And that's, you know, kind of part of how the landscape has changed is these web apps now are integrated with each other. Right. And they're either SSO from, you know, Gmail to 20 other different applications, which creates a ton of risk for other applications if at some point in that integration becomes compromised. Right. So if we look at a workflow like logging in using my Amazon credentials to Audible to order a book, if Amazon had weak authentication or Amazon had other security flaws, it would directly impact all downstream systems. And I think we're not considering that kind of at a broad, I'm going to use a really big brush and paint a broad stroke, but, you know, from an AppSec perspective, it doesn't seem like we consider what I like to call context, right? Mm. Where does this application that we're evaluating, where does it live in the application ecosystem for your organization? And a lot of folks, you know, and this is something that really scares the bejeebus out of me. And that is, people just kind of blindly integrate stuff, right? So like you'll go buy Salesforce and integrate with Microsoft SSO. Like, cool, that's convenient. How good is your authentication implemented, right? Because you can not do a good job of implementing solid security. So now Salesforce could be compromised because you enrolled people, but maybe some person didn't get the enrollment and, you know, bad guy password sprays in 20 seconds you're in, right? And so I think we have to change a little bit about how we think about that. And that's really, I think, the crux of the issue here.
You know, it's kind of interesting that you say that, because a lot of times with a lot of dev teams have to deal with is, you know, it's all about rolling out new features as quickly as possible. And it's more so about making things work, more so than making sure that they're secure. You know, it's kind of one of the downsides of the Agile framework, in my opinion. But, you know, I think you're 100% on the mark in terms of, you know, we definitely need to start thinking of the context of web applications. And I know it's a buzzword, but really start, as we're developing these applications, start to shift security left and getting, you know, thinking about that sooner rather than later.
Agreed, 100%. Yeah. And I think a big part of shifting our approach here is going to be looking at applications less so from an individual perspective in that silo and more from a portfolio perspective, right? And so application portfolio as a buzz phrase is not new. Generally, it has been used to describe, you know, just a collection of apps that an organization is responsible for. But we haven't, at least in my experience, done a great job of applying risk and context to each individual application relative to where it lives in that ecosystem. And so there are a couple of great stories that we have too, just from this year. My favorite story, because it's just the coolest thing ever, is we were working with a pretty big organization, somewhere in the tune of like 25,000 users. And so we were doing an external penetration test. And as part of that, we kind of do a high level app pen test on things as we come across them. And what we realized is that they had a remote access system that relied on the internal username and obviously a legitimate password. It didn't have MFA to log into this like segmented area of the network. And the problem we had is we had a really good user list, but it was all email addresses. And the internal account was like some random number value, right? And so we found an application that leaked email addresses. And that in and of itself is, I mean, what, maybe a medium risk finding on a report? And then we found another website that I think was some kind of self-service website. And what we realized is that we could submit the email address and the error message that would come back embedded in the source as a comment was the internal randomly generated user ID for the inside of their Active Directory account. Putting those together, yeah, we went over and then we password sprayed this third system, which was the remote access system, and ended up, you know, catching an account that we then used to elevate privileges from inside the network to domain administrator. So here's why that story matters in the context of what we're talking about. Three different apps, right? One of them is a web-based SSL VPN. One of them leaked, email addresses. And then another one allowed us to convert that email into a legitimate internal user account. On an individual level, each one of those findings is not groundbreaking. Combined, they are catastrophic, right? Because we stopped after getting one account. Who knows with the number of accounts they had, who knows how many we would have gotten. And so it doesn't seem like a big deal until you put it all together. Again, context.
Agree. And that's something that, man, that's tough because a lot of times dev teams, especially in a huge environment, we have multiple teams, you know, they tend to not talk to each other and that just creates silos. And so that's how you end up with one system whose, you know, security posture is drastically different from the other, like in the example you mentioned. So, man, that's crazy. And honestly, that should scare more people, honestly.
Oh yeah. And we get a kind of a cold response from a lot of clients when we're doing penetration testing. And we'll find, for example, everybody seems to be SSOing right now to all of their external resources. We're doing this zero trust thing, right? Except nobody's actually really doing it. They're just kind of half doing it. And so what we're doing though is we're going from a segmented environment where all of our resources are inside the network. So we have some protections. We're pushing all those out into the cloud, enabling single sign-on and calling ourselves good, right? Except that in some cases, you know, we maybe don't integrate single sign-on. And now there's this login just living out there that allows me to spray for weeks or months if I'm a bad actor. And so, you know, that may not even be an important app, right? But like, for example, we found one that was It was a benefits app, but it wasn't even to view benefits. It was an explanation of benefits, but it had a username and a login, right? And it was integrated on the back end with ADFS, but it wasn't single sign-on. But there was no MFA. So guess what? So now, now I'm enumerating freaking AD accounts on a web-enabled, you know, user interface. And even though every other thing on their environment is, you know, is SSO, dude, I'll go get a legitimate account over here, use that to try to log into, you know, the Microsoft's single sign-on, and then maybe they don't have MFA enabled, or maybe they haven't enrolled yet. So then I enroll. So there's just, you know, again, it's a complex world, dude. And we have to start looking at it from that perspective. So to your point, it's super tough because the developers are all over here. Their job, they're grinding, man. You know, they're pumping out code to solve problems. They're not thinking top level. So we have to solve this problem at a management level, right? Maybe even at an executive level, we have to start looking at this as where does each application live and draw little lines to it, man. Like a thought, what is that mapping called?
Oh, like a huge word map.
Yeah. There's a word for it. I can't think of what it's called,
you know,
but
you just got to bust out the bulletin board and the thread and, you know, the push pins.
Heck yeah, man. With little like Polaroids and stuff, you know? But yeah, so we have to start thinking about it that way. And in my mind, when I envision what that might look like, you know, it would be a nucleus, right? Is I would have this web application that's in question. I still have to do the old stuff. And what I mean by old stuff is we still have to do, we have to classify the system, right? Does it house data that's private or sensitive? We still have to apply a risk rating overall, like from a business continuity and stuff like that. So we still have to do all of those things, but then what does the crater look like when this thing gets nuked? Does it touch other things? What do the integrations look like? And so that's what I want us to start doing at a high level is, you know, put that app as a nucleus and start drawing lines. This app talks to this. Maybe this app shares a freaking database server with another app. And when this app craters, the bad guy gets access to both databases. By the way, that's happened.
On one of my pen tests, actually. It's crazy. I think a lot of times in the bulk of these cases, it really just comes down to misconfiguration. And something that I tend to say it a lot is not fully utilizing what you currently have. So, I mean, we look at things like Azure SSO, and yeah, it's great. You have authentication and a certain base level protection across every single application that you put it in front of. And that's awesome and great. But are you fully utilizing everything that comes with it? And a lot of cases, the answer is no. So you have SSO, you have conditional access, which can really secure applications. But like you said, either A, there's one service where we forget to put SSO out in front of it, largely because maybe we don't have all our applications documented. Mm-hmm. Or two, we put MFA. We have it set in our conditional access policy. You have to have MFA. That's good enough. When there's so much more that you can do to really secure in terms of, you know, maybe you add, hey, you can only log in from certain locations. Or even what I personally really think is cool is you can set up a configuration for what is considered a trusted device. So if only your employees should be accessing this app, you set up what a trusted device looks like, that eliminates so much, that reduces your attack surface so much, because maybe you have a certificate that's specific to your organization on each device or something along those lines. Well, now you can only log in if you have that. So there's a lot of, I think in a lot of cases, we're just not fully utilizing everything at our advantage.
Agreed. Absolutely. And if you take the time to do this exercise that we're talking about, where you kind of draw out what that relationship looks like visually, I think what you're going to find, to your point, is that some things are going to have a lot more lines going to them than others. And that's the thing, right? That whether you realize it or not, that is the thing that you need to focus on early. And I think a lot of people will be surprised at two things. Number one, where, what access, or access is the wrong word, what methods we can use to secure whatever that thing is, like you're talking about, that has all the lines going to it. Maybe we go there first and we say, holy smokes, man, what is the best I can do here? And then we bloom out from that. In addition, look at the things on the peripheral, right? That one little app that's not SSO integrated, but still has integrations with other things. And, you know, that's where data classification and application risk, you know, assigning application risk values is going to be important. But all of that assumes, and you hit it right on the head when you said it earlier, you got to know what you have. Yep. Well, all of that assumes proper change management, proper asset management, that you actually know what systems are out there.
So what's even more interesting, I'd like to take a step further, is, and as we've seen, I think you've probably seen this in a ton of cases, where it's not just our own internal applications that we use. It's not just the cloud integrations that we use, but it's also the individual libraries that developers are using as they're writing, and, you know, they're writing as well. Something as simple as, you know, you hear it all the time with Python in particular, where Python libraries get hijacked. Well, if you don't keep up with that or even know every single library that you're using, man, it's so easy to get compromised in a case like that. It's so easy for you to have a vulnerability and not even know about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just comes down to visibility, you know, which is an easy word to say and a really hard word to do, you know?
So let me ask you this. I guess, what would you recommend people draw the line in terms of, hey, you know, we're using all of this stuff. The time, you know, documenting all of this means that we slow down our production and now we're not meeting our release dates.
Sure. Yeah. So to me, that comes down to the implementation level from executives as what their risk appetite is. You know, and I would just present that to my chief risk officer, and I would say, hey, dude, check it out. We can get you to a net zero, right? Which is the most dangerous phrase in the world, because nothing's ever net zero. Nothing that works can ever be net zero. But we can get you there, right? But it means that we're going to do one release a year. Let's say, you know, will you tolerate 100 high risks if we close them every, you know, within 30 days of discovery? Will you tolerate that? Right. And so you just kind of have to get that risk tolerance for them. There's always going to be that kind of balance that's going to occur there. And it may, Darius, maybe just be something we figure out on the fly. Right. And that seems to be the desire for whatever reason in the DevOps world is, let's just roll, see what happens, you know? And so, you know, obviously, if we're going too fast, we're introducing too many issues, we slow down, we back it up, we do a little bit better job maybe with our bill of goods or you know, software components and tracking those. But and we could do an entire podcast just on DevSecOps, you know.
Oh,
and,
for sure.
And so, because we're, you know, we live in that world now too. But I think, you know, the key takeaway here for me is stop looking at Oh, you know what? Hold on. Before I move past this, one other thing that falls directly into this conversation. How many times just this year have you been doing a web app penetration test and stumbled onto something that could be significantly bad? And they're like, nah, that's out of scope.
All the time, at least once in every engagement.
Yeah. Right. And in some cases I distinctly remember one you and I did together where we stepped a little bit out of scope and dropped a web shell on a server that turned out to be like a central server globally. Yep. For somebody. And it was like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Like, hey, can you guys get that off of there? And so, you know, but you know, the boundaries that we put up, and I understand we have to limit things to some capacity, right? We can't just have an open-ended web app pen test that goes for months. You know, but we see that often where, you know, you're standing across the field from something going, that looks really bad. You guys should check that out. And they're like, yeah, no, we're not gonna look at that right now.
So, oh man, this sounds like definitely another podcast topic on how to successfully have a web app pen test engagement.
Let's do it next week, man.
Yeah. Cause you're exactly right. Yeah. You definitely have to scope things, but I feel like a lot of times, dealing with clients, you know, you can't be afraid to, you know, give the tester everything, you know. So like sometimes, yep, just, hey, here is the source code And that will cut down one on time as far as, so that way the,
oh, yeah,
the tester doesn't have to figure everything out. But a lot of times just by looking at the flow of how everything is developed, you can point out vulnerabilities just like that.
100% agree, man. Yeah. And you know, a big part of that is really understanding, again, context of that application, you know, and those boundaries, which, by the way, pro tip, the bad guys don't scope. they just follow it wherever it goes, man. So we have this disconnect, I think, between the way we perceive security and the way security actually is in the real world, you know, and I think it's true in the context of how we are managing web application risk today. And I think we could do a better job, right? So key points, takeaways, we'll go ahead and wrap it up, is stop looking at applications like they're in a vacuum, right? And stop looking at cross-site scripting on this one application as being one flaw in one app. It's not. It's a flaw in an ecosystem of applications that all integrate with each other and interact with each other in some capacity. And a little flaw here combined with a little flaw over here maybe is a big flaw. And you give one of my guys domain admin to your network. Oops. So yeah, big conversation. I think we could probably talk for days on it, but any closing thoughts from your side?
Oh yeah. The only thing I would also say, and I will say this every time I speak, is know what you're using and fully utilize it. Don't always go out and just get the shiny new thing, like fully utilize everything at your disposal.
Yep. Absolutely agree with that. So folks, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed this, check us out, on our blog at offsec.blog, and like, share, all that good stuff. And we will see you next time.